podcasting can record itself. A movie, a book, and a play. So I just finished, literally Hitler, just finished watching, I don't even remember what the fucking name of it is. DC animated movie. It came out a couple of years ago. I think it's been a couple of years now. Supergirl and the Legion of Superheroes. I can't even remember the title of the fucking movie. It was good. When I went into it, I wasn't sure what to expect because it was like, it was billed as far as I saw as a Legion of Superheroes movie. And I'm not a big fan of the Legion of Superheroes, even though part of their comic book run, Supergirl showed up, and it was actually a really good plot. I've talked about it on the podcast before. Supergirl shows up, and the Legion of Superheroes are in the 25th century, and somehow or another, she ends up in the future, and she's with them, and she thinks she's just dreaming, and she's going to wake up at some point, and so she's kind of walking around just being very reckless about what she's doing, and half of the Legion of Superheroes thinks that she's the greatest thing on Earth, and they're in love with her, and the other half of the Legion of Superheroes thinks that she's the most dangerous threat they've ever encountered, and they have to do something about her. And so the entire comic book series was much better than I expected it to be, because the Legion of Superheroes, honestly, is kind of stupid and gay. Here's the basic throwdown on the Legion of Superheroes. It's the 25th century, you know, technology, travel between the planets, blah, blah, blah. Everybody in the Legion of Superheroes is like a teenager, and they sort of lord over this, oh, you know, we're smarter than everybody else and better than everybody else, and they... It's actually very totalitarian. It's like teenage totalitarians. They allow all the other planets to have their own governments, you know, and pretend to be autonomous. It's kind of like how the Jews allow us to pretend to be autonomous. So the Legion of Superheroes is the Israel of the 25th century. And some of the characters are okay, and some of them are just stupid. So anyhow, I heard about this movie and I heard Supergirl was in it. So I was expecting a Legion of Superheroes movie with Supergirl making an appearance. Actually, the movie was pretty much about Supergirl. It starts with Supergirl, it ends with Supergirl. Legion of Superheroes shows up in her movie. I'm not going to go too much into the plot. I mean, it's a comic book plot. You know, there's the bad guys. They want to get the super weapon so they can dominate everybody and yada, yada, yada. And the majority of the Legion of Superheroes is off across the galaxy and can't be contacted. And Supergirl, who is not a member, and the other cadets who are just there to learn and training and aren't members yet, they all have to save the day, along with Brainiac 5. You don't know who Brainiac 5 is, that's okay. He's this green guy. He's supposed to be the smartest person on Earth. Although, and then him and Supergirl, of course, get off to a bad start and they fight with each other because Brainiac 1 was evil and Brainiac 2 was evil and Brainiac 3 was evil and Brainiac 4 was actually evil as well. However, Brainiac 5, see, he's not a bad guy, unlike the previous Brainiacs, and Supergirl isn't buying this. So they get into a fight, but then, of course, they turn out to be allies, and Brainiac does, in fact, turn out to be the good guy and everything. And then they're going to the vault where the super weapon is held, and they're going to break into the vault to get the super weapon before the bad guys get it. And at that moment, Mon-El shows up and says, "Hey, what are you guys doing?" They're like, "Oh, we're going to break into the vault to get the super weapon before the bad guys get it." And Mon-El says, "Well, here, let me help you out." And I'm sitting there going, "Brainiac, you're supposed to be the smartest guy in the universe. You can't figure out that Mon-El is the bad guy?" And of course, they break into the vault thanks to Supergirl's power and Brainiac's brain power. They get past the encryptions and the lasers and everything else. And then Mon-El goes, "Ha ha ha, I'm the bad guy. Thanks for letting me into the vault so I can get the super weapon." And I'm sitting there thinking, how does Brainiac 5, the most intelligent being in the universe, not see this one coming? Maybe he doesn't read comic books. I saw this a mile away. All right, anyhow, Here's the important parts of the Supergirl movie. Number one, they took Triplicate Girl. She's a girl. She triplicates herself. So there's one of her. And then she wiggles her nose or whatever she does. And then there's three of her. They took Triplicate Girl and turned her into a nigger. Because, of course, we do. The other important part of this movie that will concern you, my dear listeners, is the movie starts off with Kara and her mother on Krypton. And they're doing some stuff, and it's kind of funny when Kara tells her mother, "I can't hear you from first place." And anyway, they're doing their thing, and then the planet starts to destruct. And so anyway, so Kara's mother, she's a general in the military, and she's some girl boss because she's got to deal with the Science Council and the Labor Council, or the Guild, rather, you know, and all this other stuff. And, oh, she's busy. She's so busy because she's career girl, career boss, girl boss, and she's neglecting her daughter. All right, so then the sun starts blowing up. So she runs with Kara to the place where girl boss mom, I don't even know girl boss mom's name, girl boss mom has been in secret, no one's noticed this, has been building all of these little escape rockets modeled after the one that Superman's father built, you know, to send him off of the planet into Earth and everything. So she's built this giant bank of escape rockets. And so now the sun is blowing up, so she activates the escape rockets. Well, guess what? They all fail to activate. They're all defective. Shock and surprise. A woman attempted to build things and they're defective. Only one of them activates. Only one. And so Kara's mother puts Kara into that one and shoots it off into space. And so this whole time, there's no father. And wait, like, where's dad? Is dad going to show up? Does dad get just anything? Nope. Okay, so we blow Kara off into space. Oh, and before this happens, so Kara gets accepted into the military guild. Except that in the actual lore of the Supergirl background, she's not in the military guild, she's in the science guild. But never mind, because so all this happens, and it goes into the credits, and then I see that this movie is written by a woman. Great one. Is she white? Yes. Is she overweight? Yes. Did she inject her feminist agenda? A little bit. A little bit. Not a lot. Overall, the movie was fine for a comic book movie. All right, so Kara's mom builds all these escape pods in secret because they have robots to do everything, and she ejects, bam, Kara's gone. Okay, so Kara gets to Earth, and she's walking around being a 16-year-old girl. She's grumpy, and she's pissed off, and she's snotty, and she is spoiled. Imagine if you took a 16-year-old girl from today and took her 100 years back in time, and she didn't have a cell phone or a cell phone. Or a cell phone, right? She would be incapable of functioning. And so that's Kara on present day Earth. She doesn't have computers that you can talk to and do everything for you. She doesn't have robots to do everything for you. She's got all of this anger that she can't control. She gets in a fight. She does all kinds of property damage. She's got a bad attitude. She's snotty. She's princessy. I'm going, okay, see, that's actually the character, because that's what I expect. She is literally Hitler, a 16-year-old girl who has been sent to what she considers a primitive backwater planet, and of course she's going to have an attitude problem. And as she goes through the end, this is great, she gets to the end and she tries to destroy the super weapon by hitting it, and it won't break. And of course, that's her way of dealing with everything throughout the movie that is pissing her off. She just hits it really hard and breaks it, which also is exactly what I expect from the character. I think that's a realistic portrayal of a 16-year-old girl with superpowers. Anything she doesn't like, she would just punch it and break it. So then we get to the end, and it's yada, 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 and she's going on, oh, I miss Krypton. I miss my mom. And I'm waiting. And I'm waiting. Does she miss her dad? Why, no. There's no mention of the father. The father could not be reached for comment. So apparently on Krypton, robots do everything for you, including inseminating the women. Because Kara has a mother, but she has no father. And there's your fucking feminist agenda. Because in the actual comic book history, she has a mother and a father. You know, like most normal people do. Other than that, again, for a comic, I'll put the link to, like I said, I can't remember the title of the movie. I'll put a link to it in the show notes if you're interested in watching a comic book movie. Guys, it's not groundbreaking. You know, comic books are not groundbreaking. Very few of them are great literature. Other than The Dark Knight Returns and The Watchmen, those two are great literature. Other than that, they're just my good entertainment. Moving on. Let's do this. Let's get this one out of the way. Hold on. I got to get over here for a second because I got to remember the name of the other book. The name of the other book. All right. We're going to talk about T.J. Martinell's book, The Redeemers, which I told you I was reading. I don't know who published this, but some of the pages are falling out. The spine is kind of shitty. Okay. TJ's other two books that I have written, which I have written, I wrote TJ's books, which I have read. Reading and writing are different. The other two books of TJ's that I have read are The Iridian and The Pilgrim's Digress, both of which I've talked about before, both of which I recommend that you read. They're very good. They were written after, I think, I was trying to find my copies. I think I have them in a box put away somewhere, and they're not on my bookshelf because I wanted to see what year they were written. I suppose I could look right now on the interwebs to make sure. Why don't I just do that? I'm going to do that. Let's see. Where is it? T.J. Martinell. 2021. Pilgrim. 2020. Interesting. 2021 and 2020. Whereas the Redeemers, what does this say about the Redeemers? The Redeemers was written in 2018. Okay. I'm going to do an honest review here, guys. TJ's writing has definitely improved since he wrote this book. The Iridian and Pilgrim's Digress are very, I don't know exactly what the correct literary word for it is, but they're tight. There's not a lot of fluff. It keeps moving along. They're very engaging. I enjoyed the hell out of both of these books. I'm not going to say I didn't enjoy The Redeemers, but I am going to say, in my opinion, you can see a marked difference between TJ's writing in this book and those two books. There's some fluff. There's places where I found myself skimming. It's like, I get it, TJ. They're in a bar. They're drinking brandy. They're smoking cigars. I got it. I kind of don't need the details here. I got it. We can move on. There are a few typos that we could give him shit about, but it's not that big of a deal. The biggest problem I have with this book, and I talked about it before, and I still have it. It never resolved itself. Okay, so here's sort of the nutshell, is newspapers are now illegal, and reporters, basically the reporters are gangsters. They're walking around with Tommy guns and they're shooting each other. I don't know if you've ever known any reporters in your life, but most of them are not very good at shooting guns. Now, okay, here's the thing. In order for me to enjoy this book, I had to just cast aside my need to understand how these reporters became good at combat and good at shooting guns, and also how the man who runs this newspaper can afford all this stuff. How much money can you make selling a newspaper? How much money were people in this alternate dystopian future willing to pay for quote-unquote news written on a piece of paper, right? There is just a lot of disbelief that was hard for me to suspend. And I had to take this sort of like an urban fantasy. If you don't know what I'm talking about, when I say the term urban fantasy, I'm talking about those movies too. Those books that are primarily written by women, written for women, where it's like modern day New York City, but you have elves and orcs and trolls and everything running around. I've never actually read one of these books, but I know they exist because they just look stupid as hell. And I'm not going to read one of them. It's kind of like the Shadowrun RPG, except really fucking gay. It's like if you took Shadowrun, which is a great role-playing game, and you turned it into a romance novel. That's urban fantasy. And I just said, okay, fine, I'm not going to understand how you can make all this money selling a newspaper that you can afford to buy all these people and buy all these buildings and buy all these guns and buy all these ammunition, and why your reporters are running around shooting each other for a story and all this other stuff that's just completely beyond me. And I'm going to be honest, felt a little fan fiction-y. Once I set that aside and just let go and allowed myself to read the story and enjoy it, the story's good. If you can take all of that for granted, which was really hard for me because I need these details. I really need them, right? So I'm reading this other book. I can't remember the name of it because I can't remember the name of anything. It's by Poul Anderson, whom you may have heard of. He's a science fiction writer, old school. And it's actually a fairly recent book by him, but he's old school sci-fi writer. He's writing about they're on Venus, and it's a series of short stories. So they're on Venus, you know, and they're doing the air processors to make the atmosphere breathable over time. And he's explaining how it works. And it may not be real science, but the point is it sounds like real science. And he makes it sound practical. And he's got all this stuff, like they're doing the almost as fast as the speed of light drive. And he's explaining how it works. And it sounds practical. And there's cloning going on. And he explains, right? It all sounds believable. I know there's probably details in here made up or whatever, but it's fine. But he gives you the background so you sit there and go, I can fucking buy this. I can suspend my disbelief on this shit, and I can believe that this spaceship is traveling at almost the speed of light. TJ, I love you to death, but I still don't know why in the fuck, how in the fuck this newspaper thing can make any money and stay in business, and why anyone would buy it. I don't have the background I need for this to come together in my head. Once I set all that aside and I read the story, you know, it's these two guys and they come here and they overcome the struggles and they got to deal with bullshit and you got a rivalry, but it's the rivals respect each other and you got, you know, politics over here and people maneuvering over here and you got a girl and you got the guy falling in love and you got this and you got that and you got gunfights and you got who can I trust and who can I not trust. And it's a good story. It's a very good story. Once you just sit aside, and maybe you can suspend your disbelief, maybe. Once you sit that aside, it's a good story. I skimmed a couple of times because TJ gets a little wordy now and then. But overall, it was a good story. In my opinion, it's not TJ's best work. I still think you should read it. You should buy a copy. You should buy all of TJ's books because we need to motivate TJ to write more. And I looked on the Amazon. I still don't see part three of the trilogy. I started the first book of the trilogy. What is that? It's not the Redeemers, the Stringers. I think it's the Stringers is the first one. And by started it, I mean I read like the very first chapter. So I'm going to plow forth. Ready to go buy this book. If you don't read it, buy it anyway, because we want TJ to write more books. And definitely buy Pilgrim's Digress and definitely buy The Iridian. Those are very good books. The other thing we're going to review today is I mentioned to you guys that I was going to go see the play Becky's New Car. And I told you that I did not know, because I've heard of the play before, but I've never seen it, never read it. I did not know how feministy and girl boss it was going to be, because it's, you know, about this girl in like midlife crisis and she gets a car and she wants a new life or whatever the blurb is, right? Well, saw that. And I got to tell you, it was not feministy at all. It's very much the play itself. So that with the play, there's always two things. There's the script and then there's the production. The script, it's very much a Molière comedy. So it's one of these things where everything starts off, and as the play goes along, you start to find that everybody is more intertangled with each other than you originally suspected. And then at the end, everything comes to a head and everybody's like, oh my God, we're all related. And then it ends. The production. So Becky was played by this actress and she was really over the top. And at first, as we first go into the play, and you have to imagine my arms waving all over the place as I'm doing this, because, oh, she was really like this. Did you know my husband, he's a roofer, and I work at a car sales place. What do you call that? Car dealership. I do paperwork, and I'm really kind of over the top, and I'm like this. And it was really annoying for like the first 10 minutes. And I thought, oh, I'm really going to fucking hate this. But then I realized that there are actually women who talk like this. There are. They exist. And they're really fucking annoying. And remember, when you're seeing a play, you don't have to like all the characters, right? Because love and hate are not opposites. Love and hate are the same. I've explained this before. The opposite of love and hate is indifference. And Becky, as portrayed by this actress and doing it as she was directed to do by the director, who is a woman, a white woman who's overweight, just for the record, overweight white women, everything they touch, they destroy. Or eat. They eat it or they destroy it. One of the two. So Becky was annoying. And as it started off, I thought I would have directed this differently. I would have. There's a lot of lines Becky had that I thought, instead of her delivering them over the top like this, if they'd have been delivered with a little more dry humor and a little more sophistication, I think they might have been funnier. As the play went forth, it grated on me less because, again, I realized, okay, she's really annoying, but I'm not indifferent to her. And thus, I became emotionally involved in the play. Her husband, Joe, the actor who plays Joe, killed it. He had, in the first act, he does some, it's okay. The second act, oh my God, he had some lines that were absolutely hilarious. So the play over, it was very funny. Like I said, it was not feministy at all. So Becky gets into this predicament that she gets into where she's dating a millionaire whose wife has died, and the millionaire thinks her husband is dead, even though Joe, her husband, is still alive. And she falls into this predicament, not because she's a strong, independent girl boss who can have it all and doesn't love her husband. She falls into this predicament because she just gets really flustered and she keeps saying yes when the millionaire asked her, do you want to come to my mansion, instead of just saying no. And so it's not girl bossy and it's not feministy at all. It's just sort of, it's a woman being very, very wishy-washy and not being able to just assert herself and allowing herself to be blown by the wind that she just, because we all know women fall into these things. They have no responsibility for their own actions. She just sort of falls into all of this and it builds and builds and builds. And then the conclusion of the play is fucking hilarious. I mean, it is. I'm serious. It is fucking hilarious. So if you have a chance to see a production of Becky's New Car, give it a shot. Once again, it's theater, so you never know. Your local director may turn it into a feminist movie. Your local actors may not be that good. I don't know. You can never tell. But it was very enjoyable. It was funny as shit. Had a great time. Glad I went to see it. There you go. There are your reviews for today. We will get back to talking about low sperm count and all this other stuff and AGDs. Oh, my. Okay, guys, hold on. Somebody mentioned, I think it was in the Telegram, and the Telegram self-destructs like every 2 weeks or whatever. Somebody out there, you told me that you found like the median AGD. Can you, please, I can't find that. I was looking in the Telegram, or it's like, did someone send me an email? I can't find it. Can you please send me that information in an email? Again, maybe if it's an email, I'm stupid, I can't find it. If it's in the Telegram, I think it's gone. God@CYNLIBSOC.com. Fur baby spelled backwards, @CYNLIBSOC. Please send that to me, please. And the other thing I need your help with out there. We've all heard of this. There was some many ages ago in some homosexual magazine, somebody wrote this article about the homosexual agenda and how to get homosexuality accepted by the masses. Like, everyone in our corner of the internet has heard of the existence of this article. I can't remember the name of the magazine. I can't remember the name of the article. I can't remember the author. I can't remember jack shit. I need to find this. If any of you out there know how to track this down, can send me a copy or a link, or even just send me, hey, great one. The name of the article was this. It was in this magazine. I can go look for it myself. Help a brother out, motherfuckers, okay? I need these two pieces of information. I appreciate it. And I think that's it. I have rambled enough. I'm going to finish my gin, go do some stuff. Recording this on Monday. I had the day off. I'm getting shit done around the house. I'm also eating. I got a big old chunk of salmon. I got some asparagus. I got some Brussels sprouts. I'm going to bake that stuff up later with an entire stick of butter inside there. I'm going to munch out on that while watching. I think I'm going to watch Buck Rogers in the 25th Century with Erin Gray, the hottest woman who's ever lived. And I'm going to do some other stuff. What I'm not going to do today is play computer games. No Star Wars today. Got other shit to do. Anyway, there it is.